What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Tuesday to you. It's Twitter Tuesday here on this podcast, and like I told you on yesterday's pod, we have a lot to get to, and so much so that we're going to have to make this a two-part Twitter Tuesday. So if you don't hear your item today, we're going to get to it tomorrow. Just a lot of great questions that have been sent in, and I know that everyone's minds are spinning here as the season is fast approaching and a lot of questions to get to. I want to make sure I take the time to answer them as best as I can. So we're going to do Twitter Tuesday today. We're going to do Twitter Tuesday tomorrow on a Wednesday, and then we'll tackle the tough questions when it comes to the Bills safeties on Thursday. We'll tackle the tough questions when it comes to the Bills special teams on Friday. So if you have items for safety or special teams, send them in. Joe@thedraftnetwork.com is the email. You can hit me up on Twitter @TheJoeMarino. The DMs are open. One little programming note here, though. I want to see if we can come up with a better way to brand Twitter Tuesday. Conceptually, it's a Q&A type podcast, but I have some issues with it. First of all, not all the questions come from Twitter. A lot of them come from email. I would say almost most of them come from email. And I want to see if we can come up with something better than what Locked On Dolphins has. My buddy Kyle Krabs, he hosts Locked On Dolphins. He has his own Twitter Tuesday concept, and he's branded it as Power to the Pod. All right, and a pod is a pack of dolphins. The concept of giving the power to the fans, to the listeners, to supply the questions and dictate the content of the show. We can do something better than that, right? We got Buffalo, something, right? Like herd of Buffalo. I'm not the most creative guy, right? I don't know that I'm going to be the one that comes up with the right name to brand this podcast, these Twitter Tuesdays, but I hope that you can. If you have a great idea for what we can brand this as, hit me up at @TheJoeMarino on Twitter. Again, Joe@thedraftnetwork.com, or put it in a review. Leave me a 5-star review and give me your suggestion to what we should name this show. Not only do I want to name it something better than Twitter Tuesday, it's also one of those deals where sometimes I want to have some flexibility if we need to do 2 days of Twitter Tuesday. Well, that's weird if it's on Wednesday, and then, you know, maybe something happens. There's some breaking news, and we need to push it a day or something like that. I want the flexibility, and the name doesn't give that to me. Let me know what ideas you have to brand this show concept with a name that really kind of fits the Buffalo Bills and the types of discussions that we have on this podcast. So with that out of the way, let's actually get to Twitter Tuesday, which I hope has a new name very soon. B Mormon 2020. He's the leadoff today. And that's because last week somebody had asked if I had ever asked B Mormon if he was actually Brian Mormon, the former Bills punter. And so I said on the podcast, I said, B Mormon, hit me up on the DMs. Let me know if you're Brian Mormon, the Bills punter. And we have a response, folks. B Mormon 2020 says, Joe, I am not Brian Mormon. I am a longtime Bills fan, and Mormon was one of the few good things about the 2000s teams. I even have one of the ugly away Mormon jerseys that looks like the current Texans jersey. If you can, how about a shout out for the Punt Foundation on the show? So let's do that. I thought this is a really cool idea that B Mormon has given us here to kind of capitalize on some of the momentum that B Mormon has for asking such great questions and give a shout out to Brian Mormon's actual charity, which is the Punt Foundation. You can find it at the punt or at puntfoundation.org. And I'll tell you what it is. The Punt Foundation is a nonprofit 501c3 that provides families in Western New York facing pediatric cancer with critical programs that offer financial, practical, and emotional support from diagnosis to recovery and bereavement. Punt operates with collaboration and guidance from community hospital partners to ensure that every dollar raised gets channeled where it is most needed. So again, guys, puntfoundation.org to learn more about Brian Mormon's foundation. Tom says, if you could script the first 5 plays this season versus the Jets, what would you run? Tom, I spent a lot of time thinking about this. And so here's what I came up with. I'm coming out in 22 personnel. 2 running backs, 2 tight ends, 1 wide receiver. You guys probably think I'm crazy. But Josh Allen, on his podcast with Mark Sanchez, said, I don't like to go into the game with like an easy completion because I'm squeezing the ball hard and it just comes out weird and I'm not settled in. And I can only help that that translates not just to like the easy completion, but to like a throw down the field where he's just going to have too much juice on the ball. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get Josh Allen hit on the first play of the game. We're going 22 personnel, two running backs, two tight ends. The two tight ends are on the same side of the formation. And then we have our one receiver, which will be Stephon Diggs, lined up outside to the left. We're running quarterback power. First play of the game. We're going to pull probably Mitch Morse. And we're going to create a numbers problem on the right side. And we are going to run quarterback power off tackle, very similar to the play the Bills ran against the Texans in the playoff game. Our next play, we're going to go hurry up. We're staying in 22 personnel, and we are going to run the football off tackle with Devin Singletary with Mitch Morse pulling, except we're going to go the opposite direction. We'll have a balanced formation. We'll have the tight ends on both sides, and then we'll have our receiver stacked out, and we're going to run to the receiver side. We're going to have our fullback as the lead blocker. We're also going to pull Morse. We're going to have a numbers advantage. Then we're going to huddle. We're going to bring in 11 personnel, Diggs, Beasley, Brown. So our fullback and our number two tight end goes off the field, and we're going to throw the football three times in a row. We're going to attack the middle of the field. We're doing that because this is a Jets defense that doesn't have C.J. Mosley. It doesn't have Jamal Adams. We're going right at that middle of the field. The first thing we're going to do is run mesh. We are going to have tight end Dawson Knox and slot receiver Cole Beasley attack the middle of the field with crossing patterns, and we're going to force people to make decisions and see what their communication is like right off the bat. Josh Allen is going to make an easy throw to the open target. Hopefully there's some run after catch. Our next play is going to be a seam route to Dawson Knox, but we're also going to have, you know, kind of a mirrored concept on the other side where that slot receiver is also going to attack the seam. We're going to go to the matchup that we like, and then our last play, we're going to go out of shotgun. We're going to run a bunch of vertical routes, and we are going to have John Brown run a shallow drag. We're going to hit him and give him a chance to create after the catch. That's what we're doing. I hope you like it. That's my plan. I think it gives the Jets a lot to think about in that first drive. It gives Josh an opportunity to run the football and get hit, give him some fairly easy throws after he gets hit. We still get Devin Singletary a touch, and I just like the way that came together. So there's my first five plays of the season. Tom had another question. He said, can or would the Bills ever possibly wear the red helmets this season? They would look amazing with our color rush uniforms, don't you think? So here's the challenge with that, and this is a stupid rule that exists in the NFL. In the NFL, you can only have one helmet. That's it. So the Bills will have their throwback helmet with the standing red buffalo in addition to the normal helmet that they wear, but they change out the stickers for that. It's the same color shell. It's the same shell. In order to do the red helmets, you would have to have a rule that allows teams to wear more than one helmet. And that's not the case. You can only have one helmet. And like in college, you watch the Oregon Ducks. They wear a different freaking helmet every week. But the NFL doesn't have such rules. So until that rule changes, the Bills will only wear a helmet that is white. But yeah, I think bringing in the red helmets from time to time would be really cool. I'd love to see the Bills wear throwback uniforms, but not like all the way to the standing buffalo throwbacks. I'm talking like the Jim Kelly, Bruce Smith, Andre Reed ones. Those, I would love to see those with the modern stitching. I think that would look really sweet. TP says, hey Joe, a team building question around running backs for you on Twitter Tuesday. Given your firm position to never pay running backs a second contract, what are your thoughts on drafting them in the first round to secure the fifth-year option? I don't think paying running backs in the fifth year is the issue. It's the big multi-year contract that carries over to when the wheels start falling off. Securing running backs with first-round traits for an extra year of their prime without having to commit long-term assets to them would increase the lifetime value of the running back to the team and remove the risk of having to shell out a four-year deal and significant money guaranteed that is moving forward. Thanks, Joe. Keep up the good work and go Bills. This comes from TP in New Zealand. Oh man, this is a great question. This is speaking my language here. I've said two things a lot here on this podcast. One of them is that I do not believe in paying running backs big second contracts ever. And the other thing that I've also said is that it is good to have a good running back. You want to have a talented running back. Well, sometimes those two things being simultaneously true is challenging because If you want to have one of the marquee running backs, you probably have to pay them. Well, TP makes a good point. Are you more inclined to draft that guy? Sometimes I am. And what he's getting at is if you do it in the fifth round, you could pick up that fifth year option. And so the way that fifth year options are now set up, it's less advantageous for teams to do that because you're going to wind up paying them based on the way they perform. And so you're naturally going to pay them a lot more money. But I still love the idea of not being tied to them for the long term. And so you get this five-year window with this running back instead of a four-year window. I can get behind that running back in the first round based on the context of your team, right? If all of your questions are answered and you feel like you need that running back that can be the feature guy, that is the difference maker, then go do it. But it can't be a situation where you've got issues on the offensive line and you can use help at receiver and your secondary is weak and you need a pass rusher. Like, you have to be pretty much set everywhere else before I can get behind that. And so sometimes, I guess my answer is sometimes, yeah, I'm okay with the team taking a running back. I was okay with the Chiefs taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire because he's a perfect fit. And now they have a dynamic running back for the next 5 years at a low cost to go with Pat Mahomes in Andy Reid's offense. So if you can give me situations like that, I can get behind it. But I do love the idea of preserving your opportunity to have a talented back in your system by not having to pay them money that extends this risk, if you will, by committing not only cap space, but giving that cap space to a player where just history doesn't say it's a smart idea. So I'm with you on this, but not for every team. The trade-off of reaching for that running back because you want that fifth-year option as opposed to, you know, making a sacrifice and not improving a different position, I'm not okay with, because it's still such a proven opportunity to get quality running backs in the second, third round. So I'm still going to gravitate towards that, but under the certain circumstances, I will get behind a first round running back. Tom says, when we were all panicking about Trey White possibly opting out, Logan Ryan's name was floating around as a possible replacement. Why can't we sign him anyways? He would be an amazing addition to an already strong secondary. It's a good question, Tom, and I saw this a bunch on Twitter in the time between Trey White saying he was undecided and, of course, the 4 o'clock deadline the next day. And here's the thing with Logan Ryan is that he's a slot cornerback. He's not a guy that really has played outside in the NFL. He's a very good slot cornerback. And while I would not be opposed to bringing him in because I think Taron Johnson deserves competition, right? And he has his own injury concerns, and I think the Bills can get better in the slot. The concern here is the cap figure, because according to Ian Rappaport, Logan Ryan is unwilling to take less than $10 million per season. So he's not unemployed because he's not a good player. He's demanding at least $10 million per season, and he's going to wait for somebody to pay him that. He's an upper echelon slot corner. I think that a team that had a big need there and had cap space should pay Logan Ryan. I don't know that I would be for the Bills doing this just based on resources that they need for this year and then also thinking ahead to roll over cap space. So if Taron Johnson went down, yeah, go throw $10 million at Logan Ryan and you're going to be okay. I think there's some concerns with that. You know, if he could play true outside corner, sure, but he's never really done that. He's made his hay as a slot corner in the NFL. Tony says, I heard Matty Glab say that we are 1 week closer to being able to see practices on Friday editions of One Bills Live. Are media outlets going to have access to practices? I thought everything is completely locked down for viewership. Now, I don't know the exact answer to this. I am certain that it will be stripped down. It won't be the same coverage that we always get where we're plugged into Twitter. The Bills are practicing and you're getting tweets from Fairburn and Joe B and Sal and all the Bills fantastic beat writers, Marcel, Louis Jacques, so many good ones. You love following those tweets throughout practice. It's not going to be like that again, but for the official team media, right? BuffaloBills.com, Matty Glab, Chris Brown, yeah, I think there's a chance that you can continue to have some coverage. Now, it'll be team-controlled coverage, which is something you should always keep in mind when you're getting that, you know, getting content from that resource. But I do think that there's a chance if there was going to be any type of coverage, it will be from, you know, the team official site, team employees, where they, you know, are subject to all of the testing standards and those types of things. So I can't confirm that it's going to be what it's going to be like, but if it is going to be anything, I would assume it would be the official team media. William says, having just listened to your linebacker show, a question came to mind while you were talking about replacing Lorenzo Alexander and also talking about the linebacker depth if Milano or Edmonds goes down. Zoe has said in a few interviews that he would be open to coming back and playing for the Bills if they needed him or if they went on a playoff run. With the state of acquiring new players due to COVID, would it be difficult? Would it be a difficult process to sign a player who is already retired, or do you think it would be the same process as signing a free agent? I'm not familiar with the dynamics of his retirement and whether or not, you know, that would make it more challenging to bring him in. I guess I do sort of have a fundamental concern over that idea, because while I love Lorenzo Alexander as much as anybody, for a guy to be like, yeah, you know what, I'm not going to go through the whole grind of the offseason or be there the whole way, but if the team's good, and they want to bring me in, you know, yeah, I can jump on board with that. I don't know if that sits well with me, where you got guys that are, you know, dialed in, you know, all year long. I feel like you kind of have a responsibility to lean on those players instead of just kind of like bringing in somebody from the outside. So if Lorenzo Alexander wanted to play football this year, then he shouldn't have retired. So I guess that's kind of like an issue that I have in my own mind processing that. And, you know, I recognize the opportunity there to get a player that knows the scheme and you kind of know what you're getting. But, you know, I think the Bills have kind of like moved on, right? They've readjusted their personnel to fit life after Lorenzo Alexander. So now you bring him back, and it just, to me, that's a little bit strange. And if Zoe wanted to be committed to the Bills this year and have that opportunity to play, then he shouldn't have retired. And I hate to kind of like throw some shade at Zoe, but I don't know. That's something that if I was a player in the locker room, you know, I don't know how much I'd like that. Brad says, I think the Jets are going to be bad this year. Me too, Brad. If the Jets end up with a top three pick, could you see them going after another quarterback? Well, there's a lot to get into with that. First of all, if they have a top three pick, I think we can assume Adam Gase is fired, all right, so that they're going to hire a new coach. So part of that process of that new coach and general manager Joe Douglas, what they would have to do is figure out, all right, is Sam Darnold somebody that we believe in as a guy that can be our franchise quarterback? He's still a young player in the league, and we can all agree that he's not been surrounded well at all, whether it's the coaching, whether it's the offensive line, the weapons around him, it's all been very bad, very different than what we've seen the Bills do for Josh Allen. And so one thing that the Bills have done for Josh Allen is they've created an excuse-free situation. They've isolated the variable. Josh Allen is the variable. The offensive line is the same. The receivers are the same plus Stephon Diggs. They got Zach Moss to replace Frank Gore. It's the same system. If Josh Allen doesn't play well, then it's a Josh Allen problem. They've not given them that chance to evaluate Sam Darnold from that lens or even close to it. So there's a reason Sam Darnold was a number three pick in the draft, and I think that he would be a player that it wasn't just because the Jets like him, like he was going to go in the top five no matter what. He's that type of prospect, and I just don't think it's been a fair evaluation of Sam Darnold. So if you can get this next coach in there and they believe in Sam Darnold as a top three quarterback, well, then get yourself some help somewhere else and continue to go with Sam Darnold, especially if, you know, you're not super sold on Justin Fields or Trey Lance, who would be the likely candidates. Now, if you're picking one, then you get Trevor Lawrence. And then you might have to say, yeah, we're going to go with that guy and, you know, try to move on from Sam Darnold. So I think it comes down to a lot of different variables. But, you know, I think that general manager Joe Douglas and that next head coach have a very challenging job in making that determination if it's a Sam Darnold problem and it wouldn't have mattered how he was supported, or if Sam Darnold was just as much of a reason for the lack of success as all the other contributing factors that were never solidified. Vin says, this is wild. All right, Vin. Vin says, would you rather be forced to A, walk through a minefield, or B, swim through shark-infested waters? And he says, neither option is great. I unknowingly walked through a minefield in Afghanistan, and I'm still here. That's a strong selling point for the minefield. First things first, let me say something. I love the opportunity to answer whatever you guys send my way. Just know that I'm probably going to disappoint you with my answers. I am a very boring person. I like to watch football, which is both my hobby and my job, and I like to hang out with my family. And I don't do much else. You know, I don't watch any TV shows. I don't really watch any movies. Maybe once in a while, I'll watch a movie with the wife on a Friday or something like that. But, you know, I'm pretty much a guy that likes to do my football stuff, hang out with my wife, my daughter, family, maybe, you know, cook, go out to eat. But, man, I'll tell you, just I'm a pretty simple guy. So you start challenging me to talk about things that aren't football, get a little uncomfortable, but send what you want my way. So here we go. I got to deal with this. What would I rather be forced to do, walk through a minefield or swim through shark-infested waters? Vin said he's already walked through a minefield, and he's here to talk about that. Well, here's the deal. This is what I've come up with in my mind that makes sense. If I walk through that minefield and I set off one of the hazards, I'm done. It's over with. There's no chance, right? I could swim in shark-infested waters, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're hungry and want to eat me. So I guess you have the same possibility. Like, you could walk through the minefield and not set anything off, or you could swim through those waters and the sharks aren't going to eat you, right? You still have that same possibility. However, I feel like I would take my chances of the hazard not necessarily killing me, that being the shark in this scenario, where if I were to go through that minefield and I encounter the hazard, I'm done. There is a possibility that the sharks don't even care that I'm there. I think I'm going to side with that, to be honest with you. I'll take my chances in the waters. I don't want to do either one of these things. I'm not a very risky person at all. So this is very, uncomfortable for me. I'm not going to, do anything that's thrill-seeking and, just jump into a pool full of sharks. But if I had to do it, one of these two choices, I think I'm going with the shark-infested waters, and maybe that was a bad choice, and you guys can let me know why on Twitter, @TheJoeMarino. Let me know if I made a bad choice. Obviously, Vin, he didn't have a choice, but he made it through the minefield, so maybe I would have the same luck. Jeremy says, you use the term arm talent a lot when discussing quarterbacks. Is that synonymous with arm strength, or does it reference a larger basket of traits in a quarterback? By the way, I eat burritos/tacos the exact same way as you do. Good answer. All right, so there we go. I got some affirmation on my burrito taco take, which feels good. You guys ripped me apart last year when I had to talk about that. When I talk about arm talent, yes, arm strength is part of that for sure. There's nobody in the world that I would say has poor arm strength that also has arm talent. To me, it's arm strength is a big piece of it. Being able to throw from different arm slots, to be able to drop down and hit sidearm throws, or if you have to go over the top, or whatever you have to do to get the ball out and be able to do so and put it where you want it accurately. And then also, I do think that overall accuracy is part of it, right? Like being able to consistently, with regardless of arm slot, throw the football where you want it. It's also not just your arm strength in terms of being able to throw the football hard. It's being able to throw the football far and with distance. So it's a combination of all of those things. So if I praise somebody's arm talent, it means that it's kind of an all of the above gifted throwing ability for that player. And yes, arm strength is a big piece of that. Last one today comes from Mark, who says, if the reports are true about college football being canceled this fall and moved to the spring, how will scouting and the draft be impacted? It's a good question. So here's one thing I can tell you is that the CBA for the NFL states that the draft has to happen before June 2nd of every year. So if it's going to be moved beyond that to accommodate for a spring football season, the players would have to agree for that to happen. Now, the reality is you now have a bunch of players that are now 3 years removed from their high school graduation, and they're now eligible for the draft. So it becomes very interesting because now these guys all have to make decisions. You have new players that are draft eligible for the first time. They have to ask themselves, do I want to declare or do I want to keep playing college football if and when that happens? Then you have this other dynamic of these seniors that, you know, do they want to go ahead and say, I've done all I can at the college level and I don't want to come back and play in the spring or whenever that next opportunity to play is, and I make myself available for the draft and technically declare early. And then you have this other dynamic of some guys are going to want to maybe play in the spring or whenever football comes back, if that's the following fall. And then they have a big dilemma in terms of the way that things fall in the calendar. Can you really play a college football season in the spring and then play an NFL season, you know, a few months later? That's a challenging idea. And, you know, it's just going to come down to these prospects making individual decisions. But there's a good chance that if the draft stays where it is, that we've had all of the game tape that we're ever going to have on these prospects. And that's already true for the guys that have declared. Jalen Twyman from Pitt, Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech, Micah Parsons from Penn State, Rashad Bateman from Minnesota, Rondell Moore from Purdue. All those guys are already declared. We've seen all the college football we're ever going to see from those players, and we have that to evaluate from. And so it's become very, very interesting. And it's going to make the scouting process more challenging because you just don't have as much exposures to look at to learn about these players. Now, some of these guys, like, I mean, Micah Parsons, I'll be honest, I've seen all that I need to see of Micah Parsons. He's a top five player in the class. But for Rondell Moore, who had a really good freshman season and then was kind of banged up last year, you know, you don't really have much to go on. You know, Greg Rousseau from Miami. I didn't mention him a minute ago, but he's a guy that's only played a true fresh or a redshirt freshman season at Miami, and that's it. And you have to decide if, based on what you saw there, where you want to draft that guy or if you want to draft that guy. So it becomes very complicated, but it's going to come down to, again, just a bunch of young athletes making the choice that they feel makes the most sense for them, keeping in mind the resume, your game tape, could be it. Could be all you'll ever put out there. So we'll see. It's going to be different. All right, folks, that's going to do it for the first half of Twitter Tuesday this week. Again, we had so much, we need to split it into two shows, so you'll hear the rest of the questions tomorrow. So again, if you didn't hear your item today, it is coming tomorrow. If you think of a new name for Twitter Tuesday, make sure you let me know. Joe@thedraftnetwork.com is the email. You can send me a DM @TheJoeMarino or leave a review and put your suggestion in there. 5-star review, a couple sentences about the pod, and of course your idea to rename Twitter Tuesday. Also, we're going to do the Bills tackling the tough questions, safeties on Thursday, special teams on Friday. So be thinking about what's on your mind regarding the safeties and special teams and send those questions in as well. That'll do it for us today. As always, I do kindly ask that you share, subscribe, rate, and review. Look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.